that this week, maybe even this morning, you will call and make a pledge and become a supporter, perhaps at the $40 basic membership level, or more if you can, maybe at $75 or more. That's up for you. That's up to you to decide. The important thing is that you do make that commitment and become an active supporter of public broadcasting here on WILL. Again, the number is 244-9455. 217 is the area code. It would be a long-distance call for you. Also, you can pledge online. We have a new pledge address this time around to make it a little bit easier to remember, and that is willpledge.org. You can do it that way. Whichever way you like, whatever works out best for you, we hope that you will be a supporter of public broadcasting and of this station. One more thing just I want to mention as a special incentive. If you call in this morning during Focus 580 with our thanks, we will send along to you a $10 gift certificate courtesy of Jupiter's Pizza in downtown Champaign. And we have certificates available for the next 25 callers. The folks at Jupiter want to encourage you to support news and talk radio with this incentive. So if you haven't made a pledge this week, now is the time to call 244-9455. All we're asking is a pledge at the basic membership level, $40 or above. And when we send you the pledge material, we'll put the certificate in there and send it to you. And you can enjoy some pizza over at Jupiter's. Well, glad to have you listening this morning. And we're also pleased to have here on the program Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician. He's been with us on a regular basis for a long time now, stopping by on a Thursday, and we talk about children's health. Whatever might be on your mind, the kind of things that you talk about with the pediatrician, we have discussed a lot of different things. We've talked about dealing with bumps and bruises and common childhood illness and sleep problems and sports injuries and behavioral issues and issues and developmental ones. Anything that has to do with a children's health, their behavior, their development, you can call and talk with the doctor. 333-9455. That's the number here in, excuse me, Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. Thank you very much.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
I came across a news story the other day. It was in the New York Times, and I knew you were going to be here, and I wanted to ask you about this, and perhaps some other folks have seen saw this article, and it has to do with sudden infant death syndrome. And here's basically what the article says. People probably will recall, and we've certainly talked about it, maybe 10 years or so ago, doctors started to advise parents to put babies to sleep on their backs. The idea was that this would reduce the incidence of crib death. Someone apparently thought that stomach sleeping might have something to do with it. And so that advice was given, and apparently a lot of people did that. And actually, over the last 10 years, it has gone down.
Yes, by about, I think, 50%. I think, sleep position reduced it by about 50%.
It seemed to do that. However, now what this article says is that what many parents discovered was that their kids actually slept better if they slept on their stomachs. And quietly, without telling anybody, there are a lot of parents who have gone back to putting kids down on their stomachs. And one of the questions that this article raises, the basic question is that a problem? And did we really have reason to think that stomach sleeping had anything to do with crib death?
Yeah, it was postulated that for some reason in some children, they would sleep with their face down, their nose in the mattress. So that, and for some reason in these kids, the alarms didn't trigger. When their oxygen level got lower, their carbon dioxide level got higher, whatever happened, something didn't trigger and these kids didn't arouse to move their head from side to side. So that's where the back to sleep position came in. And it's sure, I went along with the party line, started suggesting it, and because I really was sort of, wasn't sure I believed in it or not. Mm. But yeah, when the research came out and it showed that the numbers were down by 50%, you say, you know, I guess I think I make this a believer. In fact, the latest thing I saw from the Academy of Pediatrics is now put a pacifier in your child's mouth. Put them on their back to sleep, put a pacifier in their mouth. And we may further reduce crib death that way. And this didn't go into the mechanics of why, but I suspect the pacifier probably keeps the airway open, changes the anatomy a little bit, and probably keeps the airway open. And the other thing the Academy was saying is we're not sure about this co-sleeping. The shared bed.
Right.
And I'm not sure about it either. They said, you know, bring the baby to bed to nurse, but then put the baby back in the crib. And I'm not even sure I'd go that far, because I think if you take the baby to bed to nurse, probably everybody's going to go back to sleep during the nursing. But yeah, there is still crib death, and I think probably crib death probably has more than one etiology, and that's why we're still seeing crib death. And plus, like that article talked about, other things I've read, and sometimes daycare providers have not been as good about the back to sleep, because they were raised their kids in the age when you put them on their tummy to sleep. And I've not seen any studies that, yeah, maybe parents believe they sleep better sleeping on their tummy, but I've really never seen any studies. And when I was in practice, I never really heard any complaints. So I think, again, to reduce crib death, back to sleep.
Okay.
And, yeah.
So you're still with
back
the
to sleep.
Back to put them on their back. And
now it's okay to plug a pacifier in their mouth, which was formerly a no-no because it increased ear infections and that sort of stuff. But now it's Yes.
Doctors, make up your mind.
We should. When we have good data and know what we're doing in all cases, I think we know what we're doing in a lot of cases, but not all cases. Yeah, we will get you. Yeah, we will engrave it in stone.
All right. Very good.
But until then, stay tuned, because
further developments.
Right.
All right. Well, something else maybe just, again, we ought to remind people that we're coming into cold and flu season.
It's October.
It's October. And people probably will want to start thinking about flu shots. And I believe, and I talked about this with Dr. Jeff not too long ago, it looks like probably this year there will be vaccine.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things that we talked about, and I think also has been in the news, that I think that There's someone who has decided that children, as we all know, are disease vectors, and that, in fact, they're thinking that maybe a lot of the way that a lot of adults end up getting sick and getting flu is they get it from their children. Yeah. So that suggests that one place you would want to concentrate on vaccinations is if you can get the kids vaccinated. So then if they don't get flu, then they won't be passing around. They won't be passing around it among themselves, and then they won't be passing it. They won't be going to school, going to daycare, going wherever, getting it, bringing it home, and then giving it to their brothers and sisters and their mom and dad and anybody that they come in contact with.
So the rule is still, the elderly are first. 60 or 65 and older are first. Anybody with a chronic disease, be it heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, any of those kind of diseases, there should be nothing. Yeah, if you're immune suppressed, you're under cancer treatment or something like that, probably the vaccine will not harm you, because it's a killed virus in there. It's not an attenuated virus, so it won't harm you. But if you're immune suppressed, it may not do you any good. And this is another case where, like we were talking about with kids' disease vectors, okay, the immune-suppressed person, the person who are on cancer chemotherapy or is immunologically suppressed for whatever reason, we need to protect them by immunizing everybody everybody who comes in contact with them. So hopefully, people who come in contact with them will be not picking up influenza and not spreading it. And again, my feeling, I think you all know, I'm an immunization lover. I think it's the greatest thing that's happened since sliced bread. And this year we see they're promising that we should have adequate supplies of vaccines. So I think after our high-risk people get it, I'm for everybody. I think everybody should have a flu vaccine.
Yeah, okay.
Again, it's no guarantee, because they're guessing what strain they're putting in it, and there's no guarantee. How do I feel about the bird flu that's made so much news? It could be a problem. But right now, bird flu is called bird flu because it's a disease of birds. And the worry is it may mutate somehow and get into the human population and may cause a pandemic like 1918 or something like that. But you know what? We aren't sure about crib death, and we are much less sure about this sort of thing. So I think, yeah, if you're interested in what's going on with the bird flu, read about it, but don't stay awake worrying about it.
There, yeah, there are other people whose job it is to stay awake worrying about it. We can let them do that, at least for the present.
And if I were a bird, I'd worry about it, but I'm a human being, so I don't worry.
Well, it is a little, if you feel like thinking about something scary, it is a little scary to think about that apparently now, just recently, they have identified and sequenced the DNA of the virus that caused the pandemic in 1918, and apparently have decided that indeed was a bird flu. That is, it was a virus that started in birds, and at some point it made the leap to people. And that's the worry, that right now birds can give it to other birds and birds can give it to people. The worry is that it might get so that people could give it to other people, and that is bad. That's what we don't want to happen.
And I think there's my understanding is there also question about what killed people in the pandemic of 1918. Was it primarily the flu, or was it secondary infections that happened to people who got the flu, and that was in the era before antibiotics and other medical treatments. So I think at least, I feel sorry for people in the undeveloped nations because unfortunately they have poor or no access to health care. But I think in developed nations, if the pandemic comes, I think it will be, much less, the more mortality rate will be much less than it is in Africa.
Yeah. Okay. So that as far as the garden variety everyday flu, there should be opportunities for people to get vaccinated. Again, you said start the people who are a high risk, definitely go to your doctor or wherever you get your health care. I'm sure there will be opportunities for people who, public health, I'm sure, will be giving out shots, and the big clinics will be giving out shots. And then eventually it should get to the point where people who are even not in the high-risk groups, whoever wants one should be able to get one. Okay. Well, again, here we're open to whatever questions you might have. It's something that we do every month on the program, Children's Health, with Dr. Robert Bocek. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455.
This is allergy season two. We didn't meet last. I really want to talk about this last month because we're getting out of the allergy season. Well, as soon as we get a good frost, we will leave the predominant part of the allergy season. But allergies, either asthma or allergic rhinitis, hay fever, if you will, are immunologic diseases. And they respond best to immune suppression. And I think, fortunately, when I was a resident 300 years ago or whenever it was, we had very poor treatment for asthma. We had theophylline, which is a drug that's pretty much in the museums of pharmacology now, which was the therapeutic dose and the toxic dose were almost identical. It didn't work very well anyway. We were not allowed to use steroids unless somebody was heading for the ventilator. I think now it's changed greatly. We have much more effective drugs, and we have the inhaled steroids, or the nasal steroids for those of you who have allergic rhinitis, and they are just wonderful. Asthma's still there, but boy, these sure go a long ways to making life much more bearable for these people.
Yeah. Yeah, I think probably some people are conscious of the fact that there is a bad time for people who have allergies in the spring. And that's probably the bigger, but it's a thing that has two peaks. Yeah. It has a peak in the spring, which is probably the bigger peak. But then also once you get near the end of the summer into the fall, you start getting different things. And there's another, maybe a little bit smaller, but you can have time problems one or the other time. You can have problems. There are some people that have problems both times. They have problems all the time, from the spring when stuff starts going to the time when there's frost, when stuff stops.
And then there's the house. Yeah, and then there's the interior.
Which could get you year round.
Yeah.
And that doesn't matter. Yes.
And then there's the infections that come in the winter that tend to aggravate.
So there are plenty of different triggers. Yeah. All right. We have somebody here on the phone who I think wants to pass on a little bit of information about flu shots here locally, at least in Champaign County. Lines on, callers on line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
There, you know, both Carl and Christy are running their clinics this week and next week. They're quite widely available. Public Health is doing an open clinic on next Monday, the 24th, and on Monday, the 31st, from 9 to 5. We are encouraging anybody with insurance to go to the providers here in town. But our flu shots are for all adults now. The CDC has lifted any ban starting the 24th. So anybody that wants to get it can get it, and no one will be turned away because of cost.
Okay, earlier you said those with insurance, but you're saying any they're available to anybody, regardless of their financial status.
Correct.
Good.
Although I'm sure you're encouraging people, if you're in an HMO or something like that, if you have that kind of coverage, go to the
suggestion would be
you know, go to wherever you usually go for your health care.
The not-for-profits here in town have a larger supply than public health at this point.
Right. But you're not going to turn anybody away.
Oh, no. No.
All right. Good. Good. So, again, this is for here in Champaign County, public health, you will be offering flu shots on Monday the 24th.
24th and the 31st at 710 North Neal. For children under 9, they need to call the public health number and make an appointment for the VFC, for the vaccine for children flu shot.
Okay.
And young children need two doses.
If they're under 4 and have not had it before.
Yeah. Need two doses a month apart.
Correct. And then if you get into the live virus, if they've had the live virus, the nasal spray, there's some other issues there.
Yeah.
But you can combine them. It just has to be done a little differently.
All right. Well, good. I really appreciate you calling it with the information so that there definitely should be opportunities.
But the children's phone, the number to make the children's appointment is 352-7961.
Okay. And that's if you have a child under 9.
Under 9.
You're asking that people call ahead and make a specific appointment.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you have older kids or if you're an adult, you can just do it, just walk in.
Okay. Walk in, 9 to 5.
Very good. All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much for calling. We appreciate
that.
You're
welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let us talk with somebody else here. Charleston, this is our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to ask about steroids. Using those on small children, is that really safe? What does that do for their future health?
You know, as far as we know, now we're talking about inhaled steroids, not oral steroids. We're talking about the inhaled steroids. As far as we know, nothing. They've looked at the adrenal axis, the pituitary adrenal axis, and they really find very little evidence that it does anything bad. And I think that the steroids that are inhaled are so-called first-pass detoxified. So they hit the lungs. They are absorbed through the lungs. The lungs are a good absorptive surface. But as they go through the liver the first time, they are no longer steroids. So steroids virtually don't hit, or in effect, don't hit the body. So it's kind of like if you have eczema, you rub steroids on your skin. Absorption, you will get some, but it's very minimal. And I think this is akin to that. If they have asthma or if they have allergic rhinitis, they are in. Yeah, we are rubbing steroids essentially on their lungs or in their nose, and we seem to have no effect.
Now, are steroids ever given to children internally?
Yes. Oh, yes. For instance, many of the kids who are on chemotherapy for malignant diseases will have steroids. Occasionally, an asthmatic will be on oral steroids. Kids with nephrotic syndrome will be on big doses of oral steroids. So, yeah, steroids are used systemically. We know what they do. We know what they do positively. We are well aware of what they do negatively. So if kids are on oral steroids, the object of treatment is to get them on as small a dose as fast as possible so we don't see the side effects of the steroids.
Okay, and are there long-term side effects there?
It seems that most of the side effects of steroids are reversible, of oral steroids are reversible, but it may take weeks, months for these effects to reverse completely.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have some others we will take in just a moment. Continue to talk with Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician, clinical assistant professor at the University of Illinois, and for a long time has been a regular guest on Focus, stopping by here each month. Always a Thursday. And we started doing this as a regular show a long time ago because we thought this would be the kind of thing where people would always have questions and that it would be a good thing if we had a pediatrician on here every month on a regular repeating schedule so that folks would know, well, at a certain point, if they had questions, they couldn't call their own doctor or for whatever reasons they needed somebody to talk to, that they could call in here and talk with the doctor. And that is one of the kinds of things that we have tried to do with Focus 580. We do a lot of programs that have to do with political and social issues, and we have talked about a lot of other things. We've talked about history. We've talked about science. But some of the programs are specifically designed to give you answers, give you some resource, some person that you can talk to and draw on and ask questions. And often they just deal with the basic kind of nuts and bolts issues of life. I don't think there are a lot of talk shows that have tried to do both of these things. And right from the very beginning, we said we wanted to try to do both. So there are both kind of programs built in there. We hope that this program is useful to you, that at some point that you've come away with some information that you could use, either something that was about some pressing problem in life, or maybe the issue just was that it helped you understand the news a little bit better or helped you understand the world a little bit better. That's always been our goal on this program. Now, all I can say to you is if you think that that's good and you have been listening to this show for who knows, years and years, or maybe just months, this program needs your financial support. If you've already given, that's great. We want to say thanks. If not, this would be a good time to do it. We have some folks who are ready to take the call. The number is 244-9455. You may also pledge online, if you like, at willpledge.org. Whichever way works for you, we really like to hear from you, and it'll help us make our goal for the week. Now, in studio with me is Jack Brighton. He's
Hello.
The guy who oversees our web operations, also sometimes hosts Focus 580.
And my proudest thing to brag about is that I used to produce the show.
He is the producer emeritus of Focus 580.
That's right.
I don't think anything really much comes with that title.
Well, that and a buck 50 will get you a cup of coffee.
It's a cup of coffee, exactly so.
Yeah.
Now, in fact, if you know where you can get a cup of coffee for a buck 50, we can talk about that later.
Well, I just wanted to say that, you know, those of you listening, you already understand this is listener-supported radio, and that's the way we like to keep it because we're not here to sell you things. We're here to hopefully enlighten you with information and understanding and all kinds of helpful things. Listener-supported means that you have to support it as listeners, and this is the time when we ask you to do that. So simply go to your phone right now. Very easy to do. Take about 90 seconds. Pick up the phone, call 217-244-9455, and support Focus 580 and all the great programs here on WILL. And we really need your support during this week because this is our first pledge drive of the year. We need to get things kicked off because we have a very ambitious goal for the year, and it's really not ambitious. It's just necessary for fundraising, and this is the time when we set the tone for the year fundraising-wise. So please help us get this thing kicked off really, really good. Call with your pledge, 217-244-9455. Rita Schulte is our membership director, and she is in our pledge center, and she's the one who makes all this happen, especially we should give props to Rita for all the effort.
So it's her fault, huh?
Yeah,
I'm
okay.
Afraid so. Yeah, well,
blame me for David Inge.
If it weren't
That's
going
to be the new button.
All right, I like that.
Yeah.
Well, if it weren't for Rita, actually, we'd be out there selling ads, so thanks, Rita.
Oh, no, hey, no problem. It's At least I can do. Listen, you know, we have heard from a few folks on a daily basis here, and maybe 10 here, 12 there. We'd like to hear from 15 callers today, if that's possible.
During Focus?
During Focus, yeah. 580, who appreciate the balance of the program. Somebody once told me that if they'd have turned the button on the radio and let everybody hear Focus 580 before the interview, he probably wouldn't have needed the interview to make him move to this town because of the balance and the respect that he heard coming out of the radio. So
wow.
Congratulations to that. I have a really cool thing to tell you about before
yes.
we talk about anything else.
Okay.
It's Soggy Thursday, and the folks at Jupiter's Pizza want to brighten this Thursday. So if you call in today during Focus 580 and make one of our 15, we will mail you a $10 gift certificate courtesy of Jupiter's Pizza in downtown Champaign.
Wow.
We've got certificates available for the next 25 callers. So don't miss this opportunity. They want to encourage our listeners to support news and talk radio with this incentive. Now, they see the value in a really well-functioning, well-oiled town that's got all kinds of places where people can discuss their ideas. Coffee shops, listening boards, and a place like Focus 580. So if that's share their values, they're willing to share a little too. 217-244-9455. The certificates are going out to people pledging at least a membership level. The basic level is $40 a year.
Now, I don't want to sound like a commercial after I just said that we don't go out and sell ads, but I do want to say that Jupiter's Pizza, that's a pretty good deal. So
yeah.
If you make a pledge and get a $10 gift certificate toward Jupiter's Pizza, that certainly, you know, is an additional incentive. We hope will kick you over the edge. Go to the phone. There is one right there, 217-244-9455. The most important thing is to support the service, but also we'll give something back in the form of pizza.
All right. Well, thank you both very much, Jack, Arita. We'll talk again a little bit at the end of the hour. This is our monthly program on children's health. Dr. Robert Bocek is our guest. He's a pediatrician, has been with us here on a regular basis for quite a long time, and we have some callers who are waiting. We will not make them wait any longer. Let's go on to someone next in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Hi. I'm calling because I think the not the previous caller, but the caller before that gave some wrong information, at least based on what I heard from Carl Clinic and I think also from Christy, is that currently they're only giving flu shots to those who are high risk. Now, this might have changed, but when I called their hotline yesterday, this is what they said. Only those who are high risk are being able to access the flu shots at their clinic. So the rest of us, I don't know what, I suppose we'll just have to wait for the future. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah. And, I guess what I'd say is stay in touch. I think I read in the New York Times that Chiron, one of the providers, was having trouble again this year. So I think probably everybody's a little bit nervous and restricting it. And you, often what they do is the first few days of the open of the clinic are for high risk. And then when they realize what the demand is, then they'll open it up to everybody else. So I think my best advice is stay in touch with you wherever you go to get your vaccines and keep in touch with the newspapers and that. And, yeah, and find out what's going. Yeah, before you go there and wait in line, make sure that you're going to get what you wanted. But I think the best of my information is that there should be adequate vaccine for everybody in the United States this year. And, yeah, each provider may be limiting it to some extent early on, and then they'll probably open up as they find out they have vaccine available.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I am looking here now at Carl Clinic's website, and it talks about – it shows their that they are started – they have started with people of high risk first. And it lists dates this week up until Saturday, where they're giving out shots at a couple of for example, here are a couple of places where they're giving them at churches, and it says here plans for future clinics will be announced at a later time as additional vaccine arrives, and they have a hotline number. So I'm thinking that perhaps sometime soon, that people who are not in high risk would be eligible to get the shot. But I think, as the doctor says, it's probably best to, you know, stay in touch and call their hotline, and that at some point it'll they'll open it up to everybody. So, yeah, I think you're right. Just check. People should check with whoever their provider is just to make sure.
Thank you.
All right. Let us continue. And the next caller should be someone in Champaign. This is line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I did call Carl, and they said that the shots for everyone will probably start next week.
Ah, okay. Very good.
This week is only for the high risk.
Very good.
And my son, actually, because he's 16 months, and that's who I'm actually calling about, they have a special pediatric clinic on certain dates. So if you have a young child, they can set that up, a specific appointment versus the drive-through or the walk-in basis that they'll have at the clinics next week. So, which I'm calling about my son. Two things. You were talking about the steroids, and he has had some problems with croup. He had it last year, and he had it this year. And last year when he had the croup, it was so severe that he was, I think they call it retraction or something like that. So they actually sent him to the emergency room because they said they could deal with him better there. So we went, and they gave him a pretty good inhaler.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually hooked him up to like a mask or something. And that seemed to subside pretty well, and that took care of him, and we didn't really... But they sent us home with some albuterol to use later. So we used it, for maybe a couple more days, and then he was fine, and there were no more issues. Well, this year, again, he had the croup, and so we called the doctor. He said, well, if you have the albuterol, go ahead and use it. So we used it, but he started having, almost shaking kinds of symptoms, and that really scared us, and so we took him in, and they gave him a shot of steroid.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that different as far as a shot versus oral versus inhaling it? You said the inhaling doesn't seem to have as much of an effect, but, but he did. He actually had these shaking episodes that were very, very scary after he took this stuff.
That might, I think that was more like the albuterol than the steroids that did that.
Okay. So is that not a steroid then?
No, he probably did get a steroid. In fact, albuterol doesn't usually, albuterol doesn't usually work very well for croup. Albuterol will work best in the lower areas of the lung, and croup is a problem in the just below the larynx, the voice box.
Okay.
And albuterol doesn't work very well. Croup does tend to work, or steroids do tend to work fairly well for croup. How much steroid did he got? A whop of steroids, but a single dose like that didn't do. As far as we know, it didn't do anything.
Really?
Yeah, it helped his croup. But as far as side effects are concerned,
we shouldn't worry about
it. We just ignore. Yeah, we just we'll use big, even for asthma, we'll use big doses of oral steroids for 3 days.
Okay.
As far as side effects are concerned, we don't even worry about it. We worry about it more. They'd have to be on it probably 3 weeks or longer before they're having significant, pituitary adrenal axis suppression.
So then the albuterol probably caused the shaking. Maybe we shouldn't use that anymore. Is that typical kind of a symptom, or is that something that maybe he shows some allergy to it?
No, albuterol acts sort of like adrenaline, if you will, although it's supposedly more specific for beta-2 adrenergic effects. So, yeah, what it is, we used to use adrenaline in asthmatics. Now we use albuterol. And what's the difference between albuterol and adrenaline? Well, it's just more specific for the lungs, so it has less side effects. It causes less high pulse rate. It causes less of the jitteriness and that sort of thing, although it still does.
Okay.
And it's most likely that's what it was. How long did his jitteriness last?
It was maybe for about... half an hour to 45 minutes.
Yeah, I'll bet you that was the albuterol.
Okay.
Or maybe it was the entire experience.
Yeah, everything together.
And not the medication at all, but just the experience of being in the emergency room.
Well, the second time we didn't have to go because they just figured they'd just give him a shot at the pediatrician's office. And so that seemed to alleviate a lot of things for him. And they said we could keep giving him the albuterol, and then the So the next day we gave him a dose, and then the shaking happened again.
Yeah.
He just said, you know what, we're not going to do this anymore, because that seemed to, it really frightened him too, because he wasn't sure what was going on, and it frightened us.
And again, for pure croup albuterol is for bronchodilation, for asthma treatment. It probably doesn't even work very well for bronchiolitis, for an infectious cause of wheezing in kids. And it certainly probably is not going to do anything for croup at all.
Okay. The second question I had was about sleeping. He's pretty much been sleeping through the night for quite a few months now. But every month or so, he has these episodes where he gets up once or twice in the night and just, and either is a crying fit of some kind or is really hungry. And we actually have to wind up, and he's so agitated that we actually wind up giving him a bottle just to calm him down. And that'll happen for 2 or 3 days at a stretch, and then he goes back to sleeping through the night again.
Okay.
And we're just wondering how, if that could be related to, like, growth spurts, and how often do growth spurts happen, and do they kind of freak out the kids a little?
No, as far as we know, they don't freak out the kids, okay. But you're right. Kids don't grow at a constant rate. They have growth spurts. Is this your only child so far?
Yes.
Okay. I think what you'll notice as time goes on is that, you know, for a 3-month period, you may buy him 2 or 3 pairs of shoes.
Okay.
Because he outgrows them. And then for 9 months, he'll be in the same shoes. You know, they're disgusting, they're dirty, they're scuffed and all that sort of stuff, but they still fit just fine. And then all of a sudden he goes through another growth spurt.
Okay.
And you're buying him 3 different size shoes in 3 months or something like that. But I think what's going on at night is, I wonder if he's having what we call night terrors. Or maybe nightmares. No, these sound more like nightmares. Like he just wakes up and
he just cries. It's not like screaming out loud. He's just crying.
But you can intervene. When you pick him up, he settles down.
Right.
Yeah, it sounds like he's having nightmares or some kind of sleep disturbance that way.
Is there anything we can do?
Just what you're doing.
Really?
He's had a bad dream. I don't know, the lion ate him or something happened to one of you, or I don't know what his dreaming is, and he's too young to talk about it.
Right.
But all you do is, what you're doing. You pick him up, you nurse him, you give him a bottle, you cuddle him, you reassure him that everything's okay.
Okay.
And when he goes back to sleep, you go back to sleep too.
Hopefully. Now, but that brings up the other dilemma as far as the bottle, because he's 16 months now, and he really doesn't take one at all during the day.
Okay.
And is this, there's such a debate as to whether or not, you know, after a year they shouldn't have a bottle anymore. And I don't know, what's the latest on having a bottle after you're a year old?
No, I don't think after a year old a kid ought to be walking around with a bottle in his mouth. But I think talking about a bottle as a pacifier.
Yes.
Or giving him a pacifier, that's a different ball of wax. And
okay.
No, I think the name of the game when he's wakes up distressed at night is calm him down, conserve as much sleep for as many people as possible.
Okay. But typically, I mean, if he's not taking one during the day, he's probably all right taking one at night.
Oh, absolutely.
Settles him down.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, great. Thanks so much for your help.
You're welcome.
Right, thank you. About 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with pediatrician Dr. Robert Bocek. If you have questions, call us.
There are two kinds of flu vaccine. We didn't mention that, and I think the lady who called in earlier alluded to it. There is the kind that you get at the clinics for free or low cost is an injection. It is a killed vaccine. It is a split variant vaccine. So the most side effect you'll have, it depends on how big a needle phobia you have. You will feel the pinch of the needle. That's probably all you will feel. Matter of fact, I had my flu shot last week. I didn't even have a sore spot there. But the old flu vaccine was a whole variant vaccine. I think the way it worked is you gave you the flu and you felt miserable. This one that's out now is a killed virus. It's a dead virus. It's part of the virus, not the whole virus. The reaction rate is very, very low to non-existent. It's a very safe vaccine. The other vaccine, the nasal vaccine, is a live viral vaccine. It's kind of like our measles, mumps, and German measles vaccine. It's a virus that's been attenuated, so it's been weakened. It's been passed through an egg a lot of times, and it's not supposed to make you sick, but it can. So, it's much more expensive than the other vaccine. I don't know what the back reaction rate is, but it wouldn't surprise me if you didn't have kind of achy, little mild flu-like symptoms in a few days, for a day or two afterwards. The other thing we worry about this vaccine is, we talked earlier, okay, you have somebody in your household who's immunologically suppressed, they've got breast cancer, colon cancer, or something like that, they're getting chemotherapy. Protect them. Get the flu vaccine, but do not get the nasal flu vaccine, because it is a live virus. It's attenuated. It's weakened to not make a normal host sick, but it may make a abnormal host, one who's been immunologically suppressed, very, very sick. I'm not a big fan of the nasal vaccine unless you have a real needle phobia. Yeah. Really hate shots.
That's my question about that vaccine, because it does have these small caveats attached to it. I guess I'm not really sure what the point is, other than you don't have to stick people.
Yeah.
Is it that? Did somebody think that there were so many people that were saying, I refuse to get the flu vaccine because you're going to stick me with a needle? Then you could say, okay, here, we're going to squirt this in your nose and that'll be better?
Yeah, I guess it's only – I'm with you. I don't see a great rationale for this other live viral vaccine, right? Wouldn't take it?
All right. Well, let's talk with somebody else here. Monticello, line one.
Hi. Hello? I have a related question, actually, about the flu vaccine, and I'm calling on behalf of my wife. She's pregnant, and in the past, when she's had flu vaccines, she's immediately gotten sick, and so we're wondering whether it would be appropriate for her to go ahead and get the vaccine or not.
How long in the past was this? Because, gee, for years we've had this split variant vaccine that should have a very, very low or to zero incidence of reactions. So is she one that had trouble when she was much younger and just hadn't had it in the last 10 years or so, or is this recent?
I would say probably within the past 5 years, but
okay.
It's been quite a while for both of us. We both stayed away from it for that reason.
I think my best advice is, I'm going to hedge on this one, tell her to call her obstetrician.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Right. You're welcome.
Thank you. At the very least, I guess he should get the shot.
Yes.
You were. And if you can convince everybody she might come into contact with to get the shot,
then she'll have so-called herd immunity.
That's right. Okay. So I don't know, but yeah, I think you're probably right. It would be best get the obstetrician in on the deal and see what they have to say.
Yes.
One other thing I thought I might ask you about, again, this is something I came across, I think is kind of interesting.
It's a good way to hedge. Ask the specialist.
But, yeah. This has to do with feeding children, and it kind of gets at the idea that maybe we, particularly when we were talking about children over 6 months, we make this kind of artificial distinction between baby food and adult food. And sort of the thrust of this article is that it seems that there are more and more people, and generally being supported by their doctors, who are pretty much feeding their children the same thing that they're eating. They're not going to the grocery store and getting something in a little jar and giving that to the kids. They're, you know, whatever mom and dad are having, That's what the kids are having. And I suppose as long as they can manage to get it down, as long as they can chew it up and negotiate it that way, there's probably not much reason. And the other thing is that the caution here is you need to make sure you're careful, because if you know there's some family history of food allergies or stuff like that, I mean, you really have to be careful with that. But that may indeed be a good thing to introduce quote-unquote adult foods to children earlier than maybe we think about doing it now.
I mean, what was the first pureer? It was probably mom's teeth. She chewed up the food, pureed it, and then fed it to the baby. Sounds a bit disgusting, but you know what? It worked. And probably with the closeness of the maternal-child contacts, mom's oral flora and baby's oral and child's oral flora were probably the same. And so, and then other instruments came along, the puree. And what have Gerber and Hind done? They've just become our pureer and jarer. So, you know, now we've got KitchenAid and Cuisinart and that sort of stuff, so we can puree our foods at home, and there's probably nothing wrong with it at all. There is nothing wrong with it at all. I think there had been concern in the past, and I'm not sure there's been good data about this, is maybe babies ought to have a lower salt food, at least until 6 months or so when their renal function is more mature. So maybe we ought to give them less seasoned food, but still pureed table food's perfectly fine.
Okay. All right. Champagne here. We'll talk with somebody else. Line one. Hello.
Oh, hi.
Yes.
Question. There was a couple of things. It kind of was related to this food thing where maybe the rice cereal isn't the best thing to start babies on. And also, there was something about pacifiers helping with SIDS.
Yes.
You could comment on some of those. I'll just hang up and listen.
Okay.
You know, I read about... Well, rice cereal was always the traditional starting food for babies, and the theory I was given behind that is rice tends to be the lowest allergenic food. People tend to be not allergic to it, rice tends to be most tolerated to people with allergies, so we started with rice. I've not seen or heard anything that rice is not something we should, there's any reason to avoid that as a starting food.
I guess the concern, and in this particular, I'll pass this article on to you because it does mention this, apparently there's some concern that rice and other highly processed grains, it has something to do with how they are converted by the body into sugar, and that what happens is that they raise blood sugar and insulin levels, and I guess there's the idea that maybe that could contribute to later kind of health problems like obesity.
But we still have, rice has more carbohydrate and less protein, I think, than the other grains. But you know what? Our diet still should be, I just read an article this week that our diet still should be about 60% carbohydrates. So we're still talking, and what's a carbohydrate? It's basically a sugar. And there's always been talk about, you kick the blood glucose up and the insulin comes out and drives the blood glucose back down to normal levels. And you say, that's the way it's supposed to work. And I've not been aware that high carbohydrates, if there's any thought of that leading on to diabetes later on, unless you factor in obesity and that sort of, unless you just really get out of control.
Okay. Pacifiers?
Pacifiers, again, I just read that recommendation. It came out in the Academy News this week. There was no explanation of why they think pacifiers help with SIDS. There was another article about pacifiers and dental, and the pacifier pushing the teeth out, and that was poo-pooed by a dentist, too, that, it may push it out, but then when they give up the pacifier, the teeth come back in. And the only thing I can think of is that, again, the pacifier in a young baby's mouth somehow behaves like a what we used to call the oral airway, keeps the airway straightened out and may decrease SIDS that way. But, I will keep you posted when I find out the real explanation for that.
Well, there we will leave it with the promise that Dr. Bocek will be back again next month. He's here every month. On Thursday, we talk about children's health. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Support for the program comes from the Infant Parent Institute with offices in Champaign. The Infant Parent Institute is a private clinical practice and research institute dedicated to supporting the mental health of young children and their families. Information on the web at infantparent.com. The broadcast is also made possible by a grant from Strawberry Fields in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields Catering Department now offers boxed lunches for professional meetings or casual lunchtime gatherings. Strawberry Fields, 328-1655. Also, a very, very important source of the funds that run this radio station, you folks who are listening. This is one of those times that we ask you to pick up the telephone and dial the number and make a pledge to AM 580, to WILL. Jack Brighton is here with me in the studio. Now, here it's Thursday, sort of coming down to the end of our
Soggy Thursday,
week.
We're calling
Soggy
it.
Thursday.
Yeah.
We're trying to find ways to get people jazzed about supporting the radio station. If they haven't yet done it, maybe it's been on the list to do. They said, yes, I'm going to do it.
Still on the list.
Still on the list.
How'd that happen?
I want to cross that one off.
Wow. Well, if you call 244-9455 with your pledge right now, you also, in addition, if you make a basic membership pledge, $40 a year, which is less than a buck a week, you, we will send you, courtesy of Jupiter's in downtown Champaign, a coupon for $10 towards pizza at Jupiter's. And this is something that, in addition to supporting the station, hope that will get you excited about picking up the telephone and giving us a call, 244-9455. And did I read correctly, David, that you'll actually deliver the pizza, David?
No, 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 that's not correct.
I'm sorry. No. I thought you were going to deliver the pizza.
No,
people
no,
pledged.
No. There's no. No, I will just say thanks.
Okay.
No, I will not deliver it. Rita Schulte, she is going to deliver the pizzas.
Okay, let's check in with her then. Rita?
Yeah.
Is this true? That you will deliver the pizza? That
well, you
people
know, I,
call in,
it,
get
it's not a bad
for?
Idea, but I've got signage issues and
okay.
Can't find my way out of a paper bag.
All Less right. will deliver the pizzas.
Even worse. You just may have to walk down there.
Okay.
But it's a very nice incentive offered by the folks who own and manage Jupiter's Pizza, and we thank them a lot. Now, this is, after all, a pizza town with a sports habit, and a number of people out there are eager to help us raise the money to keep shows just like the one you've enjoyed on Focus 580 and other places on the AM 580 dial. So if you have yet to make that pledge of support and it's on your list of things to do, please give us a call at 217-244-9455 or point your browser to willpledge.org. And make a contribution. That's the only way that we'll be able to say, yep, next year we'll be hearing from the doctor about your kids.
That's right. I'm glad you mentioned the website. We should mention that more often because, gosh, it's kind of a pretty good website, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a sweet little thing.
Yeah.
And it's an easy way to make a contribution and you can listen at the same time. I mean, how bad could that be?
That's right. Well, you can listen to all the archives from Focus 580, the Afternoon Magazine, et cetera, and you can make a pledge there. So please do that if you're near your browser, don't want to talk on the phone, or for whatever reason it's easier. Just go to willpledge.org, and it's a secure site where you can make a credit card contribution or print out a form and send that in with your pledge. Again, the phone number 244-9455, and please do get in on the offer for free pizza.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break as we usually do. We'll have more Focus in a bit. First, though, an update on the markets and news, so stay tuned.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for his crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
It's 10:58. I'm Tom Rogers with this market update. Wheat is up at the moment. December wheat is at 331.5 cents a bushel, up 3 1/4 cents, or 3 3/4 cents. The March wheat is at 345 1/4, up 3.5. December corn is unchanged at 201 3/4. The March contract, 214 1/4, down 1/4. May corn is at 222 1/2, unchanged. December